topic, given the nature of what we're talking about. But to just give you an indication of this, I texted my brother as I was preparing. I said, Matt, are you shocked when you look back and see how hands-off mom and dad were with our dating? And Matt's text back to me was, that may be the reason why it was so hands-on for me. and I don't say that to, you know, I just, that's an indication, I think, sometimes of, I was a pretty good kid. I think my mom and dad, they trusted me. There's a certain naivety sometimes that you kind of throw out to your kids. So they were very hands-off, very little oversight in this regard. There were a couple principles that were laid down. Don't date non-believers. And even that was fudged once or twice. And my parents were involved in the youth group, so they knew a handful of the girls that I was dating, and I think they felt their proximity was equal to guidance. And proximity and guidance are not the exact same thing. And then the third thing is that they were just very naive. And I don't understand that, because both of them came in with some relational baggage from dating, and I think maybe they thought, we're raising our kids differently than we were raised, and therefore they'll make good decisions all the way across the board. And there's no guarantee for that with our kids, specifically in something like dating. So let me throw this out just in a kind of a general sense. But why is this topic so difficult for us as parents? Like, what are the obstacles and issues? Some of you kind of come in and start talking about dating, and you're thinking of your cute little, you know, 14-year-old who's going to be wide-eyed for some pretty little girl before too long, and you're going, I have no idea how to handle this next phase. So even thinking about how scary it is, but why?
Adults still haven't figured
out. Yeah, adults still haven't figured out, right? I mean, we still wrestle around in our marriage trying to figure it out, let alone when you're 14 and 15 trying to navigate relationships. What else?
It's not really our control. It's their choice and emotions that they go through. We don't really control those emotions and feelings.
Absolutely. You can dictate boundaries, but attractions can run wild, and that can be like fire. And it's like, I don't know where to pen it in. I don't know how to pen it in. What else?
Obviously, we have tons of biblical principles, but we have very little direct biblical guidance.
Very good. You just don't get a step-by-step, let them date at 18 or 16 or whatever that age is, and here's exactly the steps towards handing them off. We get some pretty good general principles, but then we have to apply that in a modern culture. I think one of the other things is that they get caught up in all this self-fulfilling prophecy that they should be dating. Right? I mean, they're going to get their cues from the things that they see around them, and then they get kind of left out. So this is one with, you know, you can dictate morality in your home, but it's really hard to dictate affections sometimes. And you try to model what you want them. You know, I'm always pointing out boys to the girls that are like, see that? That's a really godly man. And Matt's like, Dad, he's 50. I'm like, I know. Find a godly man like that, right? I'm very rarely pointing out a 14-year-old, right? It's just, you know, that doesn't happen very often. But trying to point these things out to the girls. So let me ask you this. Where are we as parents getting our cues for how we handle dating in our home?
Lessons learned.
Okay, good. Some of it's just lessons learned, right? And a lot of times those tend to be knee-jerk one way or another, but we tend to look on our own experiences. Where else?
Examples you see in front of you.
Good. Hopefully there's some examples you see in front of you.
Our pastor.
Yeah. Your pastor, right, yeah. Don't get examples from the good pastor. He's back in another room doing counseling, I think, somewhere. He told you he'd go to him for clarification. So, should dating, let me ask you this, should we do it differently than the world does it? And in what ways? I mean, you think about that, how is it tangibly different than the way that the world goes about dating? And we say, well, we maybe a little more connected with the family, we do it under the umbrella of the church, but by and large, I'm going to push back and say, for the most part, it doesn't look all that different. Right, we still kind of have those same pursuits. I'm hoping you're raising your young men that if they have an interest in my daughter, that they need to come talk to me first. Right, I wouldn't give them the keys to my car without a significant interview. I'm certainly not giving them my daughter's heart without a significant conversation and regular conversations. Right, you need to upkeep your license. Yep. Right, this is not a one time and go off. We're going to do this on a regular basis. That would be countercultural. That doesn't happen, right? I mean, you're a liberated woman. You make your own decisions. And yet, I'll push back on that and say, yeah, my 15-year-old doesn't make her own decisions yet. You know, when she's on her own, she can. So,
also to get interested or put some interest into the person that they're interested in.
Sure.
Get to know them, find out, you know, as best you can without crossing the minds of their parents being.
Yeah, and you got to figure out what those relational boundaries are. So what are the three biggest, think about this, the three biggest things that have impacted dating? So for the first, you know, we'll betray our Genesis stance here. For the first 6,000 years, dating roughly looked the same. But there was one invention that changed dating forever. The automobile, right? It's the automobile. What revolution immediately followed the automobile? The sexual revolution. It's not coincidental. For the first time, teenagers had the ability to get away. And when teenagers get away, that's usually a recipe for not good decision making. And so the sexual revolution follows right on the coattails of the automobile, because parents all of a sudden were like, we weren't ready for this. We didn't know that these were the next things that were going to happen. The second thing that began to impact our approach was the pervasiveness of Hollywood. And so the average teenager will spend 35 minutes a day with their parents and will spend upwards of 6 hours a day taking in and imbibing entertainment. That's going to have an impact on what they see and what they think things need to look like. And then the third thing, and I've not had to do this one yet, although some of you have seen this, is social media. Social media now allows you to be connected in a way that has never been allowed before. So I make fun of, I don't know why the college kids keep coming over to my house, because all I do is really make fun of them. But I make fun of them all the time and say, you guys missed out. Like, we used to have to call with a cord, so your mom knew when you were in the pantry with the cord, you were talking to a girl. Because I was never talking to my best friend in the pantry, right? But if I was in the pantry with this cord that was stretched as far as it possibly could, and then, you know, inevitably mom would get on the other line, and Mom, are you listening? You know. But we had to call, and then her dad would answer. Hello? Is Angie there? Who is this? Nate? What do you want, Nate? Angie? Like, I don't know, your voice is cracking all over the place. There just was a certain level of accountability that you immediately had, because my mom knew when I was on the phone. She knew when I was talking. I wasn't allowed on the phone after 9 o'clock. I mean, all the rules that were much easier to piece together. Now a quick text. Now a social media post. Now a Snapchat or an Instagram. And so it allows these kids to connect in a way that makes them feel much more connected emotionally than they probably should be, right? There's a proximity in communication that allows for a false sense of dependency relationally with one another that didn't exist 20 years ago. So we've got to navigate these three things, the automobile, social media, and Hollywood, and how do we go about getting rid of all the chaff and still shepherding our children appropriately? So, here's why I think this is a big deal, all right? So I get to do the pleasure of doing a lot of weddings here. So 2 years ago, I did nine weddings in a summer. I love doing the counseling with the college kids when they're ready to get married. I like even the wedding day, the rehearsal. There's some times where it can get a little like, okay, let's speed this puppy up. But I'm a big proponent of marriage. In fact, we had 25 college kids over on Valentine's Day this last Friday, and I'm always like, hey, honey, what about those two? And boys are dumb. I mean, boys are dumb. You got to nudge them like, boom, see that girl? That's a good wife. And they're like, huh. But sometimes you gotta remind them of these things. But I'm a big proponent of marriage, and so I promote it a lot with these kids. But I also get to listen to their baggage. And when they sit down, we do 6 to 8 counseling sessions, and we do very practical things where I'll say, okay, here's a note card. Write down your three biggest insecurities and trade note cards, because they're going to come out at some point, and they will come out in a form of ammunition if we're not careful. And inevitably, people who have a lot of history dating, that's one of their insecurities. Either past physical baggage, past emotional baggage, coming in and saying, you know, or somebody's insecure because somebody else has long-standing relationships. And so I get to see it, the tears, even the uncertainty, as people are kind of laying these things before each other as they prepare to be married. So it's a bigger deal, I think, than we think. Right? I mean, you guys can all remember your first love. You can all remember your first kiss. You can all remember these things. And sometimes there's some baggage and guilt that comes with that when we have not dealt with that in a redemptive manner. But then we're expecting 15, 16, and 17-year-olds to deal with these things appropriately to push them on and then to move on into a significant marriage relationship. I think dating lays the groundwork for the expectations that we have moving forward. I'm a big proponent of short dating, and let's get married. Right, so I'm one that, if any of you guys may get mad at me someday in the future, because if I see two 19-year-olds in a godly relationship and they're ready and they come to me and say, what should we do? I'm like, you need to talk to your parents. We need to get married. I just don't think God intended for people to be in 5-year dating relationships with hormones running wild to protect purity, all so that they can live in a nicer house. I mean, I think sometimes they say, look, we figure out the financial side of things. You're a hard worker, we'll figure it out, right? Most of us had financial hardship when we got married. My first contract as a school teacher was $18,000. Kirsten's was 14, and we were committed to living on one income. So those financial burdens, man, weathering those storms, now we've weathered the suicide of my mom. Now we've weathered significant family issues on both sides. But it was all just, you know, we built up the calluses on these, well, we can't go rent a movie because we don't have any money. It's a meaningless struggle at that time, but it's a really big deal when you're, you know, 20. So I don't even think those hardships are necessarily a bad deal. But I do think we begin to lay the framework for what our marriage is going to look like a lot of times with dating, and whether it's physicality, finances, all kinds of things. I think dating is a doorway to sexual expression in a sexually charged culture. You only need to crack the door just a little bit for your teenagers to burst through it. Right? I mean, and here, all right, I know very godly people here before me, but you guys, your kids are you, right? I mean, think of your, I know in your mind you think they're the best of you, right? I didn't say that's not nice.
You'll eat it.
But your kids are you. I mean, it's the first thing I told parents all the time. Stop thinking your kids are better than you. They're not. They're still sinful human beings who have you in them, right? So that you were a little shadier than your kids thought you were, all right, or than your parents necessarily thought, and your kids will get away with things if you let them as well. There's a certain naivety just the other thing is, you know, as parents, we tend to think if they're not having sex, we're fine, right? I mean, that's our standard. If we can keep them virgins till they get married, oh, I've done a fantastic job when it comes to dating. But what about all the people that get caught in the wake of codependent relationships, right? So yes, sexuality is one. But you guys can think back. I mean, one of my best friends got seriously involved with a girl, and he severed every relationship. And he was completely different when he was around her, so none of us wanted to hang out with him. He would, you know, he was kind of a tough guy to get around here and be like, hey, sweetie. It's like, I don't want to hang out with that. So we stopped. And he was fine. I mean, 5 nights a week just hanging out with her. Personality changed. Interest changed. He wanted nothing to do with anybody else. And it took him a long time to come out of that. Even because they broke up. Date for 3 years. Struggle with all those things. Sever relationships. And then come out and go, huh, I'm all alone. I didn't maintain any of these other friendships. So codependency issues can be a big one. Because most teenagers can't balance it all. I mean, we put them at 16 years old in positions where we say, I want you to keep up your grades. I want you to get a job and start working. I want you to make good decisions with your license. I want you to make good decisions with your phone. I want you to make good decisions with your girlfriend. I want you to balance relationships. I want you to start using your gifts in the church. I want you to start finding somebody to disciple you, somebody to mentor you. And these kids are going, I don't have enough bandwidth for that, Mom. Like, I don't know where I'm going to do all of this. I don't know how to do it. So how do we shepherd our kids through these things, putting limits, what limits, what battles? You know, we're always worried about, I'm always worried, you know, I hear parents say, well, I'm afraid if I lay down the law that they'll run off and elope. It's like, life's not a country song, right? The majority of our 15-year-olds are not going to elope. The majority of our 15-year-olds respect what we do, even though they dig their heels in and tell you they don't. But the key is that dating starts when they're 4. And this is where I think we miss the boat as parents. And again, this is not from me to you. This is us collectively figuring these things out. But we begin to prepare them for dating when they're 4. Right? When you start pointing things out, when you start saying, hey, here's a, you know, if a boy asks, you know, Emma, she's my 10-year-old right now, and she just hates the idea of a boy liking her. But I'm always like, Emma, what happens if a boy comes around? Dad, no, seriously, what happens? He's got to come talk to you. Can I go now? Well, that's the first step, right? And we walk through these things. And so I may have told this from the pulpit before, but when Emma was, she was about 6 years old, and the doorbell rang, I opened it up, and little kid looking up at me, said, yeah, Zach? And he said, I like Emma, and she said I need to talk to you. And of course, you know, I'm up a step already, so it's like, yeah, you little punk. I just looked down, I said, Zach, do you have a job? And he said, no. I said, well, you get a job first, and then you come around, and then we'll talk about the next step, okay? Okay, well, apparently it's been a rough market because he has not come back. I don't know how marketable his skills were, but he's not come back. All right? So how do we recognize, and so we'll talk about a couple of these things in practicalities, but let me give you just three things to recognize codependence in teenagers. If you see a significant change in interests where they love sports and then the next minute they want nothing to do with sports, that they're just, that's a flag, right? I mean, you can begin to see an unhealthy nature when all the interests change immediately. Interests will change over time. I'm not nearly as sports crazy as I was, you know, when I was 18, and it's not because of my wife. Some of that's just hopefully maturity, where I just realize I get all worked up over this game that I can do nothing about, and I don't have time to watch it. So there's been a gradual change in interest, but some, her interests have changed too. But they didn't change overnight, and they didn't change when we were 17. Thirdly, is there a shift in their personality? And they get a girlfriend, and all of a sudden they're completely isolated in their room. Or they get a girlfriend, and now they don't want anything to do with things that they previously want to do. They're mopey, they're pouty, they snap at you in a way. You're like, they're teenagers, they're going to do that anyway. But when it's happened like this, and they're not coming out of it, that's a sign that there is an unhealthy dependence upon one person. And then the third one is this, an isolation in groups. And you see them, drop them off in a group and watch if they're just talking to a girl off in the corner at the exclusion of everybody else. That's another flag. And these are things that I think we as parents need to know. And so how do you deal with these things? Well, you ask people, right? I mean, we're connected in community. So I'd love if in a moment, you know, if Maddie starts dating somebody that I can walk up and say, hey, Kara, you're a youth group. What do you notice about Maddie? Well, we don't even see her. She's just in the shadows with Cletus. I'd say, that's good to know. I need to talk about these things. And but sometimes we just can't because we give our kids, you know, freedom, which we should. But man, I want spies. And I'm counting on you all to be my spies. And I'm hoping you're counting on me to be your spies. We do this. It doesn't take a village to raise our kids, but I do think it helps to be in the church. And, you know, for Nate Johnson to walk up and say, hey, you know that boy that Maddie's been hanging around? Yeah, I caught him out back smoking pot. Tell me, right? I want to know these things. It does nobody any help for you to just cover up. And then a year later, I'm like, man, I found out this guy's, you know, selling drugs. And he's like, yeah, you didn't know that? No. Well, I saw that a year ago. Well, why didn't you tell me? But I think sometimes we're so sensitive with our kids because we view them as a reflection on us. And so we've got to hold these things open-handed and say, look, if you see these things, I need you to tell me. And it doesn't mean it's not going to hurt. It doesn't mean that there won't be moments where I feel like I failed as a parent. But I'd much rather somebody tell me while I'm in the midst of failing than when I've already failed and it's too late. So let me have Chance and Forrest and Nate Meese come up here, and they'll just sit up here. So they'll be available. We're going to answer some questions. I'm going to throw some out here so it's not just me talking at you, because honestly, I don't have this stuff figured out. Right, most of what I'm talking about is just observation from 20 years of working with teenagers, 20 years of meeting with young men and having candid conversations over coffee. You guys know me well enough, I don't mince words, so I have no problem asking them, so how are you and your girlfriend doing physically? Like, no, seriously, what are your boundaries? Where have you drawn the lines? They drink their coffee. I say, no, I need to know these things. Not because I'm being nosy, but who are you talking to these things with? Have you chatted with the guy of the daughter you're dating? What's the problem?
That light. If you could just close that blind.
Got it.
You keep going. I got you.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. Those things are important, right? I don't want you. I could just stand here the whole time. Anyway, I don't know where I was. What was I talking about? You guys weren't listening either, so nobody does. That's so disheartening when you're like, what was I talking about? There's a room full of 50 of you, and none of you can tell me.
Oh, we all know. Nobody wants to say it.
What was I talking about, Mary Beale?
You ask guys.
Oh, yeah. Very good. Yeah, that's good. I appreciate it. Thank you, Mary. You know, asking where those lines are. What's your what do your friendships look like? And the boys, I'm baffled by how difficult it is. And some of it, you place some blame on parents, but some of it, these kids just have never had these things guided before them. So let me ask you guys this. So real quickly, you've been married how long, Nate?
13 years.
And you got saved when you were how old?
18
years old. And when did you start dating Misty?
When I was 21.
21. So you've been a believer 3 years. And so you show up, and Emerson is your father-in-law.
Yes.
And so what did that look like? Kind of walk us through real briefly in a couple of minutes your story.
Sure. Yeah, I'll give you a 25,000-foot flyby. So I was a part of a college group, 21, and Misty had just graduated from Johnson Bible College, was back home, and we were at a group together. And I hadn't met her at this point in time. She was behind me. She has the most beautiful voice I've ever heard. And she's singing, and I'm hearing it, and I'm thinking, I gotta get to know this girl. She just has a beautiful voice. I need to tell her that she has a beautiful voice. Well, long story short, I introduced myself to her. I am spending some time with her, and I'm thinking, I really, really like this girl. But at this point in time, I also know, you know what a Christian man should do? A Christian man should go and talk to this girl's father before he decides to go pursue her. So I went and talked to Emerson. At this point in time, Emerson was kind of, in my view, he was the godfather of Brookville Road Community Church. He was the one that everybody knew and didn't want to mess with. He's a godly man. I love my father-in-law, but he was intimidating. And I remember I was about to go play softball, and I'm sitting across the table from him at a Starbucks. And I go, Emerson, I really like your daughter, and I would really like to pursue her in a courting relationship. And I love the question he asked. The very first question he asked is, what are your intentions with my daughter that you would want to court her rather than just be friends with her? And if you ask that question and if you stop to consider it, it will cause you to think, what are the purposes of courtship? And I told him flat out, I want to court your daughter for the purposes of marrying her. And this was before I even asked Misty if I could pursue her for the purposes of courtship and marriage. So, and then Emerson gave me his blessing with the stipulation that I would write a whole list of accountability questions that we would go over every other month. And on top of that, I would also lay out all of the guidelines for our courting relationship. So I did that. And Nate has a copy of the returned email. So I say that intentionally because I sent it to him with a list of accountability questions and a list of guidelines that we would abide by. And he emailed me back. And his response is at the top. You can even read it. This is the original copy. I have the other one posted up in my office because it's that near and dear to my heart. He said, Nate, well done, but we can work to some more clarity on some of these. And some of them I was just like, okay. And then I start scrolling down and some of the things were like, you know, you can't ride a motorcycle together. And all I was thinking was, like, I don't own a motorcycle. I got that one. but as you can take some time, you can read through those. And it was intentional. So that, do you want any more?
No, that's good. Okay. Yeah, I think there's some good stuff in there. I just like the intentionality. I like the stipulations that Dad's laying down. And I like the fact that, you know, he's 22 at this point. I mean, this is not like a 16-year-old, you know, who's taking these steps. This is an older man. So there's a different level of maturity. I think there's some good principles there as what the expectations are. So
I met with Emerson every other month. We would meet together, and he would go through the accountability questions and ask me, how are you guys doing? Are you following the guidelines that you laid down for your relationship? So there was an element of accountability personally, him and I. And then on the off months, Misty and I would go out for dinner with Emerson and Sharon, and they would keep us accountable as a couple and then encourage us to continue to grow in godliness and in particular ways within our courting relationships. So they would consistently meet with us to give us words of encouragement and biblical wisdom as we continued to pursue one another for the purposes of marriage. And honestly, there was not a single individual that was not aware that that was the purpose for which we were courting. We were courting for the purposes of getting married. Although that conversation would come later, that was the intention from the beginning. It wasn't to date to date. That's our culture's understanding of dating, right? You date just to date. There really is very minimal purpose behind it. And we wanted to be intentional with the way that we pursued our relationship.
So. Good.
So with that said, at 18, you became a believer. How is it that you came to understand biblical courting? And without getting caught up in terms, I mean, we can be talking about dating. We went to a church for 10 years, and biblical courtship was the big thing, and it was push. You can still call it dating and still practice all the principles of courtship. So how was that introduced to you?
So growing up, I did not come from a family that the word was taught, Christ was not honored. It was a very worldly pursuit of passions, and that's what I grew up in, and that's what I pursued. And when the Lord saved me, I realized that was all just foolishness. So I really didn't have anyone early on in my life discipling me and showing me what it looked like to actually pursue a future bride. I just knew that wasn't the right way to go about it. And as I continued to work through the scriptures, there was a model for how does a man pursue a woman. You get these biblical principles, but you don't get a step A, step B, step C. But I took those biblical principles and was like, that's what I was doing before. I can't do that now. The whole model is different. The whole picture is different. So in that, it was just, I don't want to any longer date for the sake of dating. I want there to be an intentionality behind it, and I want to model a Christ-like character for whoever I'm pursuing.
So that kind of organically flew or came out of your own relationship with Christ, then you're growing and understanding.
It wasn't like an
influence in the church or anything like that?
No, not really. I mean, in some of the discipleship relationships, it was, you know, okay, let's talk about this a little bit, but really it grew up more organically from my time in the Word and legitimately trying to pursue more Christ-likeness.
That's good. So Forrest has been, like I said, 22 years, right? 28 years. That makes you old. 22, still young, 28. But obviously married to Jeanette and raised, you got, well, two of them are off in college and one of them high school. So he's in the midst of it. So he's lived some of it. He's seen some of it from a distance. But I want Forrest here because Forrest does two things that I really appreciate. One is Forrest is very thoughtful and measured in about everything. He weighs things. There's no knee-jerk reaction. But he's also, I don't have any experience with middle schoolers. I know that the Lord has set his affection upon his creatures, but creatures is about the right word. The Lord equips some people who just love middle schoolers. But I think sometimes we think dating, we think just high school. But man, middle school, and you can begin to see these passions kind of begin to run amok. And sometimes they're meaningless little crushes, but sometimes they can morph into something more than that. So Forrest, I want you to speak to, how you kind of helped navigate your own kids through the dating, and then kind of what are your observations in culture? You've seen a change over 28 years, I'm sure, at least in the medium, right? The substance may be the same, but the manner with which some of these things are transpiring has probably changed a little bit. So that's a broad question.
Yes, it is.
I don't want to limit you.
Yeah. Well, first, I mean, my approach with my own kids and my own life would be very different than what's been presented so far. You know, I was fortunate to grow up with good friends. None of us were like just trying to hunt girls down and go to bed. So, you know, I would say we focused on friendships and I went to youth group with godly people and any dating that did happen was just to get to know people better. Certainly you wouldn't date a girl just to date a girl, but you know, that's kind of my background. My parents made it clear what they expected, that there wasn't going to be anything that I would have to tell them that I would regret, or that they would regret. So I kind of have fear of God in me from my folks, I guess, to be good, but I didn't want to do anything different than that either. So with my own kids, I feel like a lot of it from the early stages on is more of who I'm raising them to be as a person and what I'm modeling for them. And certainly I think it is important to encourage having those frank discussions with them, because I think some of that's important, even if we know they have the right values, just for their own safety. If my daughters were in a situation and they were uncomfortable with a boy, what are you going to do in those situations, that kind of thing. You know, I guess several things have gone into it. One, I talked to them a lot about having good, healthy friendships with people of the opposite gender. So that's something I stress, and I stress that in my work with kids when they get a little bit too hung up on a relationship or something. I say, hey, you know what, at this stage, just be friends with people. You don't need to have some big romantic relationship. I tell them all the time, you're not going to get married tomorrow. So just relax, go back to being friends, get over the breakup, whatever it is. But just focus on good, solid relationships. Because at the end, I mean, you know, what do you want in the end? I want to be a good friend to my wife. I want us to have a close relationship. How do I get there? Well, as a young person, I want to develop what it means to really, truly be a friend with my guy friends as well as girlfriends. Not girlfriends like that I'm dating, but friends that I hang out with, right? You learn how to be thoughtful and kind and talk about things other than sports and things like that, right? So there can be a lot of personal growth through those, and that's what I expect of my own kids as well. So we put the emphasis there. We model it as husband and wife, what it means to have good, solid relationships. We probably talk a whole lot more in our family about what you're going to do with your life, what you see God calling you to do, career, that type of thing, how we prepare for that. So there are certain expectations that kind of preclude just getting involved and doing other things. So when that does come along, you know, it's certainly something we monitor. Don't try to have a lot of tight control in the sense of like having rules of you're not going to have a boyfriend or a girlfriend in middle school. At the same time, we certainly don't encourage it. Again, talk a lot about friendships. Just be friends with other people. So I think a lot of that sets the tone for my kids. I don't think any of them have been boy crazy or girl crazy, depending on their gender. You know, that's not to say that they didn't have boyfriends and girlfriends. And so we use those as teachable moments. We don't encourage things. We, you know, don't take them on dates or anything like that. It's fine. You want to walk each other to class in the hallway at school. That's cool. But we're not going to emphasize that. You know, so when that kind of thing happens, I think it would, well, we try not to make it a big deal, right? Try to just leave it. Usually it dies off. It does its thing and you move on. So that's kind of how we've handled that in middle school. And then high school, all of them have been pretty focused on their studies and whatnot and busy. And so, you know, later on, yeah, they may find people that they want to go out with and stuff. And that's fine. Again, we don't make a big deal about it. You know, they're trying to get to know their own personality, I think. You know, you develop as a person. Mm-hmm. You watch kids, and when they're in middle school, they have no idea, right? They don't know if they're an introvert, an extrovert, what. It's kind of how their personalities form as they get older. They're trying to figure out who they are. So, you know, I think going on a few dates with somebody, they're trying to figure out, well, this is a person I know from class. I've gotten to know them a little bit. I like them. They're a godly person. Is that somebody I really want to hang out with? You know, and I think that even happens into college, you know. My son, he had coffee with a girl once, and he kind of thought, oh, yeah, I think maybe she's kind of nice. I like her. And then pretty quickly he figured some things out, got to know her a little bit better that way, and figured out, yeah, this isn't going to work. So, you know, I think that happens, and those are some appropriate steps in the process. So I don't know, that's kind of in a quick nutshell how it works for us.
Yeah, one of the reasons that I wanted a couple people up here, because there's no cookie cutter way for doing this, and sometimes we get caught up on the nomenclature. You're dating, you're courting, you're girlfriend, you're just friends. I mean, even, you know, having that conversation, you know, Maddie, is it a boyfriend or is it a boy that's a friend? Oh, Dad, I wonder, right? We get caught up on some of those things, and I think sometimes we sit back and we make judgments on each other sometimes and go, oh my goodness, I can't believe the Veals let Nicole do this. Well, I don't know. I may be getting caught up on nomenclature. I don't really know what's going on behind the scenes, right? So, you know, I think some of those things, that there's some wisdom sometimes of just saying, we talk about these things, you walk to class, those things die out. I don't know. And it's easy for me to sit around and talk about these things because I've seen them, but I've not lived it yet. Right, I mean, just my girls haven't had much of an interest in boys yet, mostly because I think all the boys here are scared of me, which is yes, that's what I've been aiming for, and I'm okay with that. So, but, you know, even all of us would probably handle this differently with our own kids, because he doesn't know what my daughters do. I don't know. I mean, I know Nathan, but not like he knows Nathan, his son. There's a lot of Nates in this circle. And the same thing. I mean, he, you know, he's got four different boys, and they're all going to have four different personalities. And Eli seems to have a very soft spirit, and he's not doesn't have soft footwork. You can hear him running through the church if you feel it. He's got a very soft heart, but his other kids may not. And there may be some rebellion in that in the same way that our kids. So I wanted there just to be a couple of different approaches so that you're not hearing, this is what it looks like. And so my guess is we agree on 98% of the approach, and yet there are going to be some terms and some, you know, timings that we would disagree on. So, Chance, one of the things that that I appreciate. So I've known Chance for 10 years, and got to watch him go through this whole ordeal. So as he grew up into a young man, loves the Lord, loves the church, and then grew to love McKenna, and McKenna came into his life. Man, how old were you guys when you first, when you started getting cross-eyed for her?
Like 16 or so.
Yeah, it was probably 16 at least. And McKenna's, is she younger than you or the same age?
Same age.
Okay. So they're young, and they're involved in the youth group. So what, if you guys know Wade, I'm Diet Wade. Like, I always say that. Like, I'm the lighter version of Wade. Wade is more direct. And that's a fair assessment, right? Wade just says it. And so I say it, but I use a few more words to get there. So I'm Wade Light. But what were some of that? Walk me through kind of what things, how your parents shepherded you through this, and the things that you hated at the time or couldn't see the end of, that now you can look back and say, this is really beneficial.
So we started to become interested in each other, McKenna and I, between our freshman year and sophomore year of high school. And like at that point, I had never been in a relationship. I hadn't even really liked a girl that much. I mean, every boy has their likes when they're going up through school and stuff. But so I didn't really have any dating experience. My parents actually never really talked about it that much in the house before then. But when I started getting interested in McKenna, I didn't have a phone at the time at first, which was something that I hated a lot. But I do really appreciate that now that my parents did that, and I would do it all over again, that way again. Because that spared us a lot of emotional closeness at first that would have just come really quickly, that would have made it pretty hard to wait until marriage to, you know, become close and all of that stuff. But so we progressed very slowly at first couple of years. And I can actually remember my dad saying to me a couple of times, like sitting down and, you know, if I had questions or whatever, mentioning that, you know, you're probably not going to, you know, your relationship probably isn't going to last. You know, it's like you said, you just said it straight up. And, you know, because he had a lot of dating experience when he was in high school, and he didn't go to college first, he went straight to baseball, and so he had a lot of bad experience that he was able to tell me about. So.
Chance, what were the guidelines that they put down in terms of time together? Like, how did you, because you got your license, and you still were, there still were significant boundaries set for you.
So, yeah, when I got my license, about that time, we only were allowed to like go over to each other's houses and hang out. But obviously, if there's family there, and you know, we weren't really allowed to go into like a separate room by ourselves. And it was starting out, it was like one or two times a week, and I had a phone at that point. But my parents monitored like texting, and you know, I wasn't allowed to text her every day. And it progressively moved up to where we'd do something like three times a week. But it honestly was pretty slow. We really didn't do much for a long time. Most of our time spent together was here at church and youth group.
One of the big benefits that Chance had is Chance had three or four really, really good godly friends, right? That you didn't, like, you still somehow balance these things, because I think when your dad said, you can't go with her, are you going to stay at home? And you're like, well, I'll go hang out with my friends, right? So they kind of, in a I don't say passive aggressive, but Wade's not passive. He just kind of aggressively set up boundaries that really cultivated and forced him to continue to pour into some friendships, which, you know, was one of the, as we were going through counseling and even at your ceremony, to look out and see, you know, three or four really godly men be able to stand up with you, and not just stand up in pretense, but stand up because they were as much a part of this. I mean, they were there from the beginning, and these were men you prayed with, memorized scripture with, used your gifts here in the church with. You didn't sacrifice those, which is really unique, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of times you go through those seasons of doing that. So if you guys have questions, man, ask. You've got the brain trust here, and I'll weigh in. But if I were to ask you guys this, so what would you say is an appropriate age to when parents can say, okay, I'm going to now begin the process of letting you really pursue this in earnest? Right? This isn't this isn't a theological principle, right? This is a practical principle. So we may disagree on some of these things, and that's okay.
18. That's the age, at least for now, that I will tell my boys. You can be friends up until 18, but when you turn 18, then you can begin to... And in language, we can say dating, we can say courting. As long as we have the same principle in mind, that's when you can begin to pursue.
Are you worried at all that if they don't have an opportunity to start a relationship where they have to be under your guidance before they're 18, that they won't come under your guidance when they start a relationship after they're 18?
No. I mean, I think that that's something you could be concerned about, but that's not something that I, at this particular point in time, is one of the major concerns that I have.
So, for me, no, there's not, we don't have any age rules. I mean, if you want to go out on a date with somebody, obviously, you know, I want you to be older. You're not going to be a freshman in high school and go someplace with somebody that I don't know. But, you know, in terms of getting married, I would probably discourage it because, again, we have some expectations in terms of college and so on that, and we're not going to rush into marriage. So I would say I wouldn't want to see that happening until probably they were juniors or seniors at least in college, if not graduated, to where they were spending that kind of significant time. Before then, I expect them to balance it, and they do. That's something I think that has just come kind of through the expectations and things that my wife and I model, just how we do life and what we expect of them. But, you know, we've not had situations where they're just attached and needing that all the time. I think they respect their peers also, where they see peers balancing that time and not walking away from friendships. So they've seen that, and then they generally have acted accordingly.
All right, Chance, you're mythological kids. Chance has been married how long?
9 months.
9 months. So, what would you? I'll rephrase the question. What would you do differently that your parents, that you'd say, yeah, I think they were a little harsh here, or they didn't necessarily need to do this?
Actually, not really much. Now that I look back on it, like it was that long ago, but. I think they did a really good job. It was hard for me because, a little bit because, like, my dad was really adamant on, like, not really forming a relationship between, like, he and my mom and McKenna for quite a long time. And so when we started to do things more together, and it was something where I knew, like, I wanted to marry her if that would work. My parents were still a little bit hesitant on trying to form relationships. But, I mean, that was really only the hard thing because I felt like there wasn't really much closeness and it was kind of hard to relate. But, like, as far as, like, dating, nothing really stands out that much.
It's one thing that I thought Wade and Shelley did really, really well that I would never have articulated beforehand is Wade and Shelley kept themselves pretty distant from McKenna. And it made McKenna question all the time, is something wrong with me? Your parents don't like me. But what it did was, is it didn't allow a certain false sense of connection that if either one of them wanted to call it quits, they felt like they were obligated to other people in the family, right? It can create a false sense of dependence. Because I always assumed, and I still have to figure out what this looks like, that if one of my girls showed up and said, hey, you know, or if Cletus showed up and said, hey, I'm ready to date your daughter, I always assumed, well, he and I are going to meet regularly, and you're going to be in our home regularly. And then I begin to think, I got to figure out that balance, that you're not in some ways obligated to me in so much as you're only obligated to care for my daughter, but you're not obligated to marry her in this way. Like, I don't know, it can get a little bit messier. So even now, having to watch that, I'm stuck going, well, now I'm back to where I was before I had kids. I don't know. You know, I don't know what that looks like. Because I've seen it done well, and I've also seen somebody brought all the way into a family, and then when it ends, its families are now, you know, heartbroken, or a girl may say, I'd like to break up with him, but I really like his mom, right? And I really like his family. I want to be part of that family, but I could care less about Chance. I just like Wade and Shelley. And we say that somewhat, we say that jokingly, but when you're young, you get those things all convoluted, and it can get a little bit messy. So it was one of those things that I think gave me some things to think about. And looking back, I think there was some wisdom. But man, that would be tough, right? It'd be tough to be Wade and know that, you know, that Chance's girlfriend is kind of hurt and heartbroken on some of these things. Be interesting. Yeah.
That's where you also have to have respect for the parents of that other person, because that's where you don't want to step across the line, because it's their job or their opportunity, their blessing, to be able to guide their child themselves. But you also got to protect your child, know where that person's coming from, so that your child is not getting in that love craziness and losing sight of what's really going on.
Sure.
So how did you explain that to McKenna, or how did your parents explain that to McKenna? Or did they?
They didn't really much. And it really wasn't that big of a deal, like, but...
No, but there were some... McKenna had some tears, yeah. Right? There were some times where she didn't feel like she fit. Right, so it's not a big deal to you, but to a 17-year-old girl who sits in my office crying, it was a big deal to me, Chance.
But she has some baggage from stuff before that affected her with relationships of people that she looked up to. But I just actually had to explain my dad a lot, just his personality. Once you explain his personality, it makes more sense. And so I feel like up until like the engagement time, it was kind of, you know, she always questioned if, you know, my parents liked her or anything like that. And no matter how much I said, you know, whatever, it didn't really change that much. But then once it was more official, my parents did a really good job of, you know, accepting her, and not that they didn't accept her before, but just really tying that relationship. So now it's not even a problem at all. But I think my dad waited more, which is what he told me. It just waited until it was more serious, I guess, to kind of tie that in. But when you were talking about, you know, just trying to form the relationship, it was a little bit different for me because I was the guy, and, like, my parents could talk to me about it. And so it wasn't like my parents were having to worry about, you know, getting to know the guy of the relationship and, you know, kind of what you were talking about earlier is, and, you know, with you, like, doing responsibilities and making accountability. Like, my parents could do that with me. And so it was a little bit different with them getting close to McKenna. But I would say, like, the other way around, the parents of the girl, I think it's maybe a little bit more important to try to get to know the guy a little bit better and try to make those guidelines. So it was a little bit
different. Did that happen for you?
No. No, well, we became friends, but there wasn't really much accountability and stuff.
Well, and some of that. I had a different view for that, because I know that because Gary and Jamie saw Wade so intentionally doing it with him, they didn't feel the need to. And so it wasn't that they weren't getting to know him; they didn't feel the need to pile on, because they knew that Wade was being so intentional with that. And so, because Gary and Jamie had talked to me about that a little bit, And I said, if you trust what Wade's doing, then I'd just sit back and enjoy the show. and I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek. They were still involved in the process, but it wasn't like piling on. And they would go out. There was a unified front. Before I did the counseling, I met with both parents, and we walked through issues and concerns and all those things. And so they were very united in that approach. One thing I want to point out about Forrest. Forrest is the only one who has dual scouting reports. So I have all girls. Mies has all boys. Right, so at this point, it's like I just need one scouting report. But Forrest has a son and two daughters. And so before asking this question, one of the things that I think he did really well, if you didn't pick up on while he was saying, he created a really strong sense of discipline in his kids and self-control. It's one of the characteristics that I would say for all three of your kids. They're disciplined and they have self-control. And if you do that and you build that in at an early age, that will take care of a million problems. So even when he's like, well, we haven't had these issues, some of that's because the parenting that has taken place in so intentionally in some other areas has really, kept some of these things even from becoming issues. So if you know any of the kids, I mean, that is they're just very self-controlled and very disciplined in some of those things. But how would you, Forrest, you're the only one who can speak to this, experientially. Would you handle things differently with Nathan's 22 at this point, so maybe different, but go back to 17 handle it differently with your son and with your daughter?
I didn't. No, because they both went out with people as juniors or seniors in high school, and I didn't handle it any differently. I would say, one of the things we do, it's not like I'm like, yeah, I'll do whatever you want. There's conversations all the time, right? So I know who their friends are constantly, and I know about their friends, and I know what they think about their friends, which kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier. I really think a big part of it is shepherding their hearts and knowing where their hearts are and how much can I trust them. And trust is a huge thing. So that's like, that was the number one thing when they were little. You lie, double the spankings. You got to be trustworthy. And so having those conversations and just knowing and asking probing questions that see where their thoughts are on different things. So, whatever it is, it doesn't even have to just be dating, but like maybe the homosexual culture or whatnot. Are they getting swayed by culture or are they standing strong in their beliefs? So I ask probing questions so that I know where they stand on things. So, if Elise is going out with a guy, well, I already know something about this guy. She's told me that she's interested in him and some of that. And I know, a little bit about his family and so on and so forth. So it's not just a blind thing. It's not a leap of faith or blind trust or naive trust. So I know something about this person that she's going to go out on a date with. And the same thing with Nathan, with girls. So just kind of getting that background information. So I would say, yes, I know our inclination is kind of to protect our girls more, but I would say generally handled it the same both ways.
Yeah. I don't know how many of you know my situation, but my daughter has a lot of health issues, so I just wanted to put in a voice for, yes, be concerned about who your son is dating, be concerned about who they're dating, and ask them about just kind of their mental health, how they're how the person's doing, ask the parents. Because anybody that my daughter is dating, I'd be like, hey, we got to talk. I got to fill you in. This is a very high maintenance person that you're dating, and you got to know what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah, that's good. So, yeah.
Forrest, I really like one of the things you mentioned about probing questions. And in thinking back about when I was a teenager, I was an idiot. And I didn't actually know what I thought about a lot of things. And if I would have had somebody asking me probing questions, that would have helped me process through. And I think I would have been able to have thought more deeply and more sincerely about things. And it's encouraging to hear. And it makes me want to go home and continue to have ask my kids questions. And if they roll their eyes at me, I know I might be doing a good job.
Yeah, they're mad at you. Yeah. That's the goal. So one of the common themes that you're hearing, though, from all of us, and again, Forrest he's done this more experientially than the rest of us, is how much prep work goes in, right? So many of these conversations, the regularity of probing questions begins happening when they're four. What are you coloring? Oh, why'd you use that color? Well, just starting off with those little things so that it's not all of a sudden they turn 16 and now it's like, why the interrogation? right? It's become a part of the liturgy of your home as you're having these conversations on a normal basis and talking about the things that are meaningful to a four-year-old. And then, and I got girls. I mean, I had to have tea parties. And I sit down, it's like, I don't know. I mean, your tea parties were throwing cups, is what you said, right? But all of a sudden, it's like, okay, why are we drinking from, what are we drinking? You're drinking tea. Oh, thanks, sweetie. Why this color cup? Well, it's because that's what the reception's going to be. Oh, what reception? I mean, and I say that somewhat jokingly, but those conversations, like, I had to force myself at 4 and 5 and 6 to care about things that 4 and 5 and 6 year old girls care about. And so now when they're, you know, Maddie and I go on a walk, we did a 3 mile walk last weekend, and I just have to ask one question. What happened this week? Everything. Because she just, I don't know if I've just created the monster or, but all of our kids are like that. Or like, oh, Emma's nice and quiet. And then all the other kids leave and it's like, oh, Emma doesn't ever stop talking. And I'm hoping that some of it's just because we've just forced our kids to, you know, we don't want them in their rooms with the door closed. We hang out as a family. We tease each other. We tell stories. We listen to one another. And we don't do that perfectly. But I love the fact that Maddie is, you know, I know all the boys in her life, even if she's just making fun of them. Right? Oh, you know, Chris, he's just such a moron. All right, tell me about Chris. Oh, well, I can't believe he wears pink shirts. I'm like, yes, that's my girl. We don't wear pink shirts. But she just starts talking about these things, and I kind of feel like I know some of these people. And then I'm intentional about if I even gauge that there's some interest. Like if she mentions a boy, I'll find Simon and say, hey, Simon, tell me about this boy. And because I like Simon, if Simon's like, he's a loser. That's all I needed. Thanks. We don't even need any more details. But I don't mind doing the investigative work to figure these things out. And people think that I'm joking when I say this. But if a young man showed up at my house and said, hey, you know, I'm interested in your daughter. One of my very first questions would be, can I have the name of an employer? Right? I want to call and see if you're a good worker. I want to know that you show up on time, that you're trustworthy, and that you are a good worker. You need to provide for her. That is fundamental to one of the things that you need to do. People say, really? You do? I would. I know people think, I can't believe you're going to push them all away. That's okay. Cream will rise to the top. I'm fine with pushing a couple of them away. And guess what? I know a little bit better what makes up a godly young man than my 16-year-old does at this point. So if I run off some chaff, I run off some chaff. And I don't say that, you know, to be flippant. I don't mind doing that. I certainly don't mind saying, you know, can I have his dad's phone number? I want to get to know the man who is raising the man who is then going to be around my daughter. I have no problem saying, hey, can we grab a cup of coffee? You don't know me. I'm Maddie's dad. Oh, we've heard all about Maddie. Yeah, that's great. Let's grab some coffee and chat about this and figure out how do we do this in a two-pronged approach, you know, because you marry a family. Whether you want to or not, right? All of you with in-laws are like, yep, marry a family. And so I think it's important we have those conversations. Some of the questions is I looked over the contract that Nate Meese had to put together that I think are really important things for us to consider. You know, are you involved in church? Not do you go to church, but are you involved in church? Are you learning to sharpen your spiritual gifts at 16, 17, and 18 years old? Or are you just taking up space? I want to know that you're involved and active. I want to know who your friends are. You know, somebody once told me you are the average of your 5 closest friends. So if this boy shows up and his 4 friends are a bunch of morons, then he's probably a moron. You probably attract people who are very similar to you. That doesn't say much about your husband, does it, Mindy? No. Mindy's husband's my best friend in like 30 years. So lucky her. So, you know, I want to know that his grades are being kept up. Like, I'm going to have to begin to have an interest in this boy to some degree. I don't know what it looks like. Right, so I'm in the same boat that you guys are. It's really good. You know, Forrest is really encouraging me to just think, okay, a lot of this stuff just takes place. It's like painting, right? Everybody wants to break out a roller, but most of painting is scraping and taping and doing all the things so that you can actually make it presentable later on. And parenting is about 90%, you know, scraping and patching and sanding, putting on primer. And then at some point you're like, oh, it turned out pretty shiny, but it was touch and go there for a little bit. You guys have it? Yeah.
If I can add to that. Yeah, so in those times where you have those conversations, I've just seen, like, say with my girls, that, you know, I know what they say about boys at school. I know what they say about boys who go to church who don't live it. So I already know where their heart is, so I'm not... And that's not to say that you shouldn't track them down and figure out if they have a job and all that, mm-hmm. but I already know what they're looking for,
right.
right? I already know that they're kicking those guys to the curb. Yeah. So I think that's part of it, and I think then you can be a little more relaxed about, okay, if there is a guy that comes home, I know he's going to be pretty high quality. Mm-hmm. And then when I do find out more, yeah, it matches what I thought he was going to be like. So... Mm-hmm.
What other questions or thoughts do you guys have? You got it all figured out?
I was just kind of curious, like, how did you know the point, okay, we're going to take our relationship to that next step of getting engaged, and how did that change, you know, like the time you spent together and things like that?
I spent a lot of time in prayer, and then with my parents and Nate, I think once I got to the point where I kind of had school figured out and, like, what I was maybe wanting to do, and, you know, doing a budget, my dad did a really good job with just finances even before I was in a dating relationship, so it was good because we had talked about money, and so I figured that out, and once I got to a point where I was like, okay, like, I can see this actually being something that's feasible, I talked with Gary a little bit, obviously, but then we also went over just, like, some of his expectations with budget and, like, with school. But, I mean, once I could just sit down and, like, write out that it would work, I mean, that as much as you can just by thinking about it, then I guess just kind of moving it forward then.
Yeah, it was slow going. And so, even so, they, like, we want to get married, and then... It was kind of like the parents were kind of like, we don't know if you're ready. And I mean, it was a little dance that went on for a little bit as you guys kind of walked through those things. So yeah, go ahead, Brent.
I wanted to ask Forrest, do you think your daughters learned anything from watching your son go through this assessment process?
I'm sure they have. Yeah, because some of them have had boyfriend, girlfriends in middle school, and some haven't, and I'm sure they've learned from each other too. But yeah, I would say a little bit.
Well, you know, one thing that Nathan did, and I don't, if I could put Nathan on ice and hold him, Kirsten, I talk all the time. If I could put Nathan, just stick him on ice for about 4 years and then hand off a daughter to him, he could have his pick. I don't care which one. Right? I love his son. He is one of the most godly.
I told him since little love what my dad told me, what you just said, and that is you marry your in-laws.
Okay. Whoa, not the applause. You can laugh. Start clapping. That's bad. It's funny. Touche, Forrest. But Nathan is one of the most godly young men that I've ever met. And so my guess is that even the standard that he set as he's presented himself as a godly young man, but the friends he surrounded himself with, like the bar for godly masculinity in your home is pretty high, right? I mean, that's what your daughters have seen, both in your desire to serve Christ and then in Nathan's as well. And so there's a pretty high standard just in observation, which I think is important. And I think, you know, so as we kind of wrap this up, you got a couple questions here that I just don't want to keep you longer than you want to be here. And then I'll ask them one more question. But I think one of the questions that's important to ask our kids when they're interested, you say, what is the best possible scenario of this relationship right now? So you're in eighth grade. What's the best possible scenario that can happen? I mean, why do you date? Right. So I ask, just a second, I'll call on you. But I ask high school kids all the time, why do you date? And they always say this great answer. So I can learn what kind of person I want to marry. And I say, no, that's not true. You already know. You could give me a list right now. You don't need to go test drive to tell me exactly what you want in a husband. You date primarily because it's fun, right? We like to pursue. We like to be pursued. There's a big game. And sadly, it's a game of who cares less, right? I would say dating's like the bat game, you remember? And it's whoever cares the least is the one in the most control. Right, so it's a game of manipulation, because if you're all in, I got the most control because I got the least amount to lose. And so it can become a little bit of a game, and this is when they get serious, of the currency of emotions. It can become manipulation. And so, you know, how do we raise our kids with preparation for marriage to honor, serve, respect, love, all the things that are required. So does a 16-year-old boy have enough wherewithal to care for a girl in such a way that he really wants her other friendships to flourish? That he's not jealous if she still has a friend of another gender. That you know what, your parent, you need to be with your parents tonight. I haven't seen you. Yeah, I know, but you need to be with mom and dad. Your algebra grade, you got a B. You need to study, right? I mean, and not because you need another parent, but does a 16-year-old have that ability to honor and shepherd in that way? And you say, well, they're not needed to yet. And I say, maybe not. But the precedents that are set are things that move on. So, you know, even Kirsten and I, we were dated really serious sophomore year of college. In fact, too serious. We weren't ready to get married. But when you're at Taylor and you got all kinds of time on your hands, and, you know, my wife could barely keep her hands off me. But what ends up happening is I remember looking around one day, and we broke up and did not date all of junior year. And one of the reasons was I remember looking around and being like, I've lost a lot of my friends. Like, I don't know what happened. And I knew that this was not a healthy relationship. I mean, we were both virgins when we got married, but it just wasn't healthy. It just didn't have and so we broke up, and we're not planning on getting back together. And that was one of those that some older people in my life said, you just need to be careful. Unless you're planning on getting married right now, this is probably not a healthy relationship. And my junior year ended up being my favorite year of college, not because she wasn't there, but because all of a sudden, like, all of this human flourishing that needed to happen for a 20-year-old boy was allowed to happen without the burden, sorry, but without of trying to figure out. So when we got back together our senior year, we laid down stipulations that were, you got Friday or Saturday night. And I would let her pick, which night do you want? And, you know, she'd pick one. And the other night, I just wanted to hang out with my friends. So it wasn't one of these, why didn't you call? Where were you? That's why I would, can you imagine how miserable it would have been to date with cell phones? You know, just, where are you? Why are you not texting me back? But we set down guidelines even going in to correct some of these problems. So, all right. So one, if you had to give one piece of advice, closing comment or piece of advice.
Go with you first.
You're the elder statesman.
All right. I just go back to what I said earlier, and that is shepherd their heart. I think that's the place where you start. But it's hard to say one thing. I mean, I do think it's important to have ongoing communication with your kids so you know where they're at. You know, I feel like I've been fortunate. They've taken the lead that we've given them. That's not to say there aren't times that we haven't had to sit down and have some heart-to-heart talks and correct some things, too. So, but it starts with shepherding the heart.
Yeah, I would echo that. Start young. Shepherd your children into godliness, into Christ-likeness. Model for them, as a dad, if you have younger girls, what a godly man looks like. If you're a mom, shepherd for your boys the kind of godly woman that you would want them to pursue. And as you're shepherding them up into godliness, into Christ-likeness, also give them opportunities to... like for our boys, one of the things that I try to do for our boys is frequently they get a chance to take mommy on a date. So I sit them down and I talk with them about what this is going to look like, how you're going to treat mommy, how you're going to respect mommy, how you're going to honor mommy, how you're going to demonstrate a love and a care and a service to mommy while you are taking her out. And again, we've already talked, I've told my boys, you know, look, you can't date till you're 18, and right now they're fine with that. But we're also giving them an opportunity to practice. What does it look like when you're out with mom? You hold the door open. You pay for her meal. You ask her how she's doing. You ask her intentional questions. So as you're training your children up in godliness, you're giving them a foundation for things like self-discipline, self-control, those types of things. You're also giving them the practical aspects of when it comes time to pursue an individual of the opposite gender, then you've already laid the groundwork for what kind of individual should you be pursuing. And you've given them the practical wherewithal to kind of actually live that out once it becomes appropriate. You know, once, as the Song of Songs would say, when love would so please to be awakened, you can live this out now. Giving you practical, tangible tips.
I mean, kind of the same thing, but my parents did a really good job of, before I started dating, just laying down good foundations of good disciplines and, you know, how to be a godly man and talking about, and they were really open with their relationship too, so it it wasn't like I hadn't really seen any conflict or any of those things that can go on. And they did a really good job of, you know, explaining things to me while I was growing up. Like, this is what happens in marriage. Like, this are some of the things you're going to run into. And then just when I started dating, my dad was a little bit more just because of being a father-son, but he was very involved. And even though, like, he didn't reach out to McKenna as much, he was very involved with me and always open and always asking me, like they were saying, probing questions. And just, it showed me that my dad cared and that, you know, it wasn't just something that he was just letting me go and figure out. But even though I knew at the time I didn't think I agreed with him on certain things and some things were frustrating, I was always able to come talk to him or ask him questions. And there was always, like, a kindness there, even with some of the things that he, you know, corrected me on. It was just a really good, I think, relationship that he put forward, because I could trust him and I could know what he said to me was true and that he meant it. And he had already proven to be somebody who was wise and could, you know, predict things and was have good outcomes, and so I trusted him. And there's just a lot of openness that was very helpful for me.
That's good.
Let me close with this. You can do everything right, and still your kids' affections can burn in the wrong direction, right? So I think it's easy sometimes to sit here and say, here's exactly what happens, here's exactly how it plays out. There will be a nice soundtrack through their dating relationship, and then we'll hand them off. But I have worked with teenagers long enough to know that there are many really, really, really good, intentional parenting child relationships that still that can still go awry. So if I were to give you one piece of advice, I would say, starting tonight, go home and pray for your children's spouses. I tell my girls regularly and often, I pray for your salvation, and I pray that God has a godly man set aside for you if you've not been called to singleness. And if you've been called to singleness, man, let that gift run wild too. But I pray for, there are four little boys out there somewhere that I can honestly look at one day and say, I've prayed for you every single day for 20-some years. And now the expectations are high. I'm invested. Right? I didn't have a face. Now I got a face. You stand into it, you little punk. I don't mind doing that. But I would encourage you to start praying for those things now. And this is where we as parents, we are so knee-jerk in parenting, where we just say, well, we'll deal with this later. We'll deal with it when we need to deal with it. And you know, I'm going to pick on you, Heather. Heather, you're sending a daughter off to college, right? You're sending a daughter off to college next year. And I know Julia. She's got a beautiful, sweet spirit, which they're always drawn to the rebels. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding, right? That's your comforting word for the night. But the way you and Guy have modeled marriage, the way that you have shepherded in that, I think you can, in good conscience, say, go. I've set the bar high. And trust what she's looking for. And plus, she's a swimmer. She's only looking at the bottom of the ground anyway, so that helps. But, you know, Nate brought up a really good point. You know, one of the things that I'm hoping, she tells me she does, is Kirsten's very intentional about pointing things out and say, hey, you know, you see how your dad does that. You need to find a guy who does that. You see how your dad does that? You could do without that one, right? But that intentionality of doing things. And so I open the door for Kirsten when we get in there. And Emma always like, woo, woo, whenever that happens. But I tell Emma, what happens if you go out on a date and the boy doesn't open your car door? And she says, well, I'm just supposed to stand there till he does. And that's because that's what my mom would do. She would stand there in the pouring rain if I went and sat in the car. And she'd just be standing there dripping. And I'm like, it's unlocked. And she would just look at me. Get out in the rain, walk by. Just to make a point, she would be soaking wet. But those things are things that you just do now. It's not, you don't even think about it. And so what we're modeling, what we're pointing out, I think are keys. So any last questions? I've held you plenty long. I just want to make sure. I hope you don't walk away disappointed that you didn't get parameters. Right? We just didn't lay down, well, this is exactly what it looks like. This was in the Dead Sea Scrolls. They just didn't make it in your Bible. We're now handing it to you. It's not the way that it works. But I hope that you trust. You're in a good church that loves kids, that loves teenagers, that loves college kids, and with a lot of men and women who are very intentional about trying to disciple them towards godliness and even being godly spouses one day, should the Lord grant that to them. So let me close in prayer, and we'll go. Heavenly Father, we bring our kids before you, and we ask that if you have spouses for them, that you would, in your sovereignty, that you would raise up godly men and women, that LifePoint would be a church that is known for marriages that that mirror the gospel, men who love their brides as Christ loved the church, and women who willingly submit to their husbands as unto the Lord. And I know that sounds countercultural, but that is your plan. Marriage is the most visible presentation of the gospel before a watching world, and so I pray that you would protect it, not only across the globe, but specifically in this church and specifically in our families. We love you. Give us wisdom. Your word says that we need to ask for wisdom when we need it, and that you will answer us. And so we bank on that promise. Thank you, Jesus. In your name, amen. Oh, real quickly, the mayors have a really good book. I meant to bring it in here, and I forgot.
Not it's the just... mayors, Laura.
You're a character in the book, I recall. I'm just saying. So you are in it. You are a character. But it's a short book. It's very well written. It's very honest. It's very candid. So you can see her if you want to read it. I think it's, again, it doesn't lay down parameters either. It just gives you some things to think about. And some of them are from positions of regret. But there's a candidness there that I found very refreshing and appropriate. It's hard to find books on dating that are this candid. So I'd recommend it. I have one copy that's sitting on my desk that I'm done with. I can either hand it to you or give it back to her. She'll autograph them if you want. So. Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that. What's the title?
It's called Reclaiming Purity.
Reclaiming Purity.
And Katie said it's in the library.
Oh, there we go. Thanks, Katie.
Well, it's all the books about.